Hello and welcome to Bare Naked Politics. This is the podcast that strips back the news, strips back the headlines, makes it make sense, because it does feel a little bit like if you're meant to genuinely keep up with politics and the news in this country, you need to know everything about all the really complicated processes that go on. And for instance, this week, the big hot topic is this Conservative leadership election. And if you don't know the ins and outs of how the Conservative Party select a leader and how that actually works, then you're going to be a bit lost watching the news. So there's this kind of disconnect there. That's where I come in, though. I'm Julia Bell, and by the end of this episode, I assure you, you will be able to watch the news and understand not only who's involved in this leadership race, but also how it all works and where we're at now, most importantly. So let's do that. This week, Parliament actually closed for summer recess, which is, it's just like school. Parliament is so similar to school in so many ways, where they're due back, the MPs in Parliament are due back to return on the 5th of September. And that is when we can expect to have a new Prime Minister, which is weird. It's like the end of an era. It really is. It's like a chapter closing. And barring any emergencies, the fact that this recess is happening now means that this week was Boris Johnson's last week as the Prime Minister in this kind of session of Parliament. So he had to use the opportunity in his final Prime Minister's questions to say his goodbyes. And so this will really be the last bit, because unless there's an emergency over the summer and they all have to come back, which we have seen before, so don't rule it out. But unless that's the case, this is kind of the end of an era. And so in a very Boris Johnson way, he used that opportunity to say, you know, goodbye, Boris Johnson style. You'll know what I mean when you have a listen. Here it is.
I want to use the last few seconds, Mr. Speaker, to give some words of advice to my successor, whoever he or she may be. Number one, stay close to the Americans, stick up for the Ukrainians, stick up for freedom and democracy everywhere. Cut taxes and deregulate wherever you can to make this the greatest place to live and invest, which it is. I love the Treasury, but remember that if we'd always listened to the Treasury, we wouldn't have built the M25 or the Channel Tunnel. Focus on the road ahead. Focus on the road ahead, but always remember to check the rear view mirror. And remember above all, it's not Twitter that counts. It's the people that sent us here. And yes, the last few years have been the greatest privilege of my life. And it's true that I helped to get the biggest Tory majority for 40 years and a huge realignment in UK politics, Mr. Speaker. We've transformed our democracy and restored our national independence, as my right honourable friend says. I've helped to get this country through a pandemic and help save another country from barbarism. And frankly, that's enough to be going on with. Mission largely accomplished for now. I want to thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank all the wonderful staff of the House of Commons. I want to thank all my friends and colleagues. I want to thank my right honourable friend opposite, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank everybody here, and hasta la vista, baby. Thank you.
Hasta la vista, baby. I told you, it's kind of, he likes to be irreverent, and he likes to have a quotable last thing that shows that he can sort of take the piss of customs. And, you know, he's so obsessed, I think, with making his mark and having his stamp. I suppose anyone who wants to be Prime Minister would be obsessed with that. But that was his, I think, his hopeful way of, like, people remembering him as the funny Prime Minister. It's up to you how you feel about that. But there you have it. And you know what's weird is Boris Johnson has just dominated this podcast since it started. I've nearly been doing this 2 years. And he's been Prime Minister the whole time. And so he's just constantly featured because I play the voices of the people who are most relevant, most powerful. And to be honest, his involvement and the amount that you're going to hear from him is going to dwindle. I'm not trying to say that he's going to disappear from the scene. I heavily doubt that that's how he wants things to go. Can't speak for him, but I heavily doubt that's the last we'll hear from him. But it's certainly, I imagine, a lot less you'll be hearing from him on this podcast. It's very weird. And that's because it's going to be between the final two candidates. It's going to be between the former Chancellor, Rishi Sunak, and the current Foreign Secretary, Liz Truss. Those are the two remaining candidates. One of those people is going to be our next Prime Minister. How weird is that? So on Wednesday, Conservative MPs basically kind of did the last round of whittling it down to those two. They had their last round of ballots, and Penny Mordaunt lost out. She did kind of really well, and for a time she was second, and it started to look like actually it's going to be Penny Mordaunt and Rishi Sunak. But she lost out in that ballot round, and now it's Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak. Those are our final two. And now the process begins where the Conservative Party membership all vote on who they want. So it's not just up to the MPs. It's up to the whole party membership, which includes members of the public who have signed up to become a member of the party. I talked a bit more in detail about that in the last episode. By the way, if you're confused as to why we're even here, like why is Boris Johnson even stepping down? Why are we in this position? Listen to the last episode I did of this podcast. So the episode just before this. It gives you all the context. It explains how actually Rishi Sunak, who is now one of the final two and may well be our next prime minister, it explains why he played a very pivotal role in Boris Johnson stepping down. So this kind of domino effect that he and Sajid Javid all kicked off. So you can listen to that episode if you need the context. It is there for you. But let's look at how we got here. Let's look at this leadership race and explain all the people who tried and got booted out. Okay, so let's get you up to scratch on what's happened so far and how this leadership contest actually works. And then, of course, who ran and how well they did. So the rules and the timeline for a leadership contest within the Conservative Party are set by this 1922 committee, which you'll have heard me reference loads because they're the ones, remember, that Conservative MPs have to write to if they have no confidence in the Prime Minister. And so when Boris Johnson faced that vote of no confidence, you remember quite recently, that was because lots of MPs within the Conservative Party wrote to the 1922 committee. So anyway, they have a lot of power. They are the ones that set how this should all work. And they represent backbench MPs. And actually, usually, this just shows how much power they have. Usually each candidate who wants to step forward to run needs to be backed by 8 other MPs. I talked about that in the last episode. But there's been such a kind of push to hurry this process along, arguably because many want Johnson out as soon as possible. There was this effort made to shorten that timeline, to make this all quicker. So the 1922 committee decided, actually, let's have each candidate with 20 nominations at least. And that whittles out the people who just don't have a chance. And that means we're just getting into the ones that of the really weighty characters with some chance here. So that kind of eliminated a few from the bottom of the pile already. It left us with 8 candidates that were eligible to stand in the official race. They were, and I think you'll recognise most of these names, you can see what you think. They were Jeremy Hunt, Nadhim Sahawi, Suella Braverman, Tom Tugendhat, Kemi Bradenock, Liz Truss, Penny Mordaunt and Rishi Sunak. There were others that kind of hinted that they would stand or suggested that they would stand, but they pulled out in the hours leading up to the final deadline, it seems. So including Sajid Javid, by the way, who you'll remember was part of the reason that this whole process was triggered when he stepped down as health secretary. Him and Sunak were definitely the start of this domino effect that led to Boris Johnson's resignation. Anyway, we had those 8. And then once the final lineup was announced, there began this series of secret ballots amongst the Conservative MPs to start whittling it down. So let's go through them in order of being eliminated. So in the first round, anyone who didn't get 30 votes was to be eliminated. And Jeremy Hunt and Nadhim Zahawi just didn't manage it. So, boomf, first round, you're out. Just a bit of background on both those people so that, you know, you're up to scratch and you know where we are. Jeremy Hunt, I've talked about him on the podcast a fair bit, to be fair. He ran in the last leadership contest against Boris Johnson. This was back when someone needed to replace Theresa May. It all feels very vintage now. So it was between Jeremy Hunt and Boris Johnson, but Boris Johnson won by a massive chunk. And that means he has been very key in holding Boris Johnson to account. He's been quite clear that he doesn't particularly agree with Boris Johnson's approach to much. And he was also chair of the Health and Social Care Select Committee. And that meant he was big on holding the government to account for how they handled COVID. Do you remember, I've talked about it again quite a lot, those interviews with Dominic Cummings, like the grilling that lasted 7 hours. Jeremy Hunt, heavily involved in that. Anyway, Doesn't matter that he came second last time. He didn't even make it into the second round of this one. He was out, receiving only 18 votes. And now he has publicly, Jeremy Hunt has publicly backed Rishi Sunak. So between those final two of Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak, he's on Sunak's side. So he didn't make it, and Nadeem Zahawi didn't make it either. Again, booted out in the first round. He is the current Chancellor, not been Chancellor for very long. He replaced Rishi Sunak after he'd stood down, so he's very new to the job. And he's the former Education Secretary. And for him, it's been an interesting couple of weeks. Like I say, he got a new job as the Chancellor after Rishi Sunak resigned. And then within less than 24 hours, he wrote to Boris Johnson urging him to resign. Thanks for the job. You should go, though. But he was knocked out with 25 votes. And he, at least at the time that I'm recording this podcast, which is Thursday, the 21st of July, at 8 o'clock in the evening, he has said, look, I'm not backing any other candidates. So he's keeping his cards close to his chest and, quote unquote, focused on the day job. So that's Jeremy Hunt and Nadeem Zahawi didn't manage it. Then after the first round of votes, so the survivors got through that, but then it became a simple process where just each round, the person with the least votes goes. And the next person knocked out was Suella Braverman. Going into the contest, I would say she was one of the lesser known candidates. I had quite a few of you guys messaging me being like, hey, who is this Braverman? But in fairness to her, she was in Boris Johnson's cabinet as the Attorney General, making her, basically it means like she's the main legal advisor to the government, which is like a big role, right? Since being eliminated, she is now backing Liz Truss. So Jeremy Hunt is on Sunak's side. Nadeem Zahawi keeping his cards close to his chest. We don't know. Liz Truss has got Suella Braverman's backing, though. So it's kind of even Stevens so far. And then in the next round, so the fourth to be eliminated was Tom Tugendhat. Again, a few of you messaged me not really knowing much about him. But I'd say he was, I mean, yeah, he's one of the lesser known names. But I'd say he kind of, his status was bolstered because he had like a really strong voice holding the government to account because of their handling of Afghanistan and Ukraine, because he's from a really strong military background. He's a former army officer. And so he has that very close kind of emotional connection to the armed forces. And so when the UK pulled out of Afghanistan, Tom Tugendhat was so kind of aggressively and emotionally critical of how the government handled that. But he didn't make it beyond that kind of third round. And then on Tuesday, the 19th of July, Kemi Badenoch, I actually don't know how you pronounce her name. So I guess that does imply that she's not a household name particularly either. Feel free to call me out, by the way. If you'd heard of all these people a million years ago, good on you. You're a total politics geek and I respect that. But yeah, I think it's Badenoch. Kemi Badenoch. Yeah, she was the fifth to be eliminated. Again, she had held ministerial positions in the Equalities Office and in the quote-unquote levelling up department. And she even had the backing of Michael Gove, right? So yeah, Kemi Badenoch did well, but not that well. And then this left us with Rishi Sunak, who had 118 votes, Penny Mordaunt, who had 92, and Liz Truss, who had 86. So Penny Mordaunt was doing better than Liz Truss at this stage. And each time, everyone's sort of scrambling around, trying to work out where those votes for the eliminated person would go. So like when Kemi Badenoch lost out in that final round, right, whoever was voting for her, they have to move their loyalty. Who are they going to move it to? So that's the kind of interesting thing when you go between rounds. It's like, ooh, how are her votes going to get divvied up? So for instance, Michael Gove, he backed Kemi Badenoch. What was he going to do after that? That's the interesting kind of thing to try and guess. And with those votes, it did seem a little bit like, right, it's definitely Rishi Sunak. He'll definitely get it. But it's a toss-up between Penny Mordaunt and Liz Truss, right? Penny Mordaunt actually had more than Truss. But on that final day, Penny Mordaunt, like I say, she lost out. She had 105 votes compared to 137 for Rishi Sunak, so that was a big win. And then Liz Truss got that second place with 113. So that's how we got to this point. again, I had a colleague at work being like, who is this Penny Mordaunt? Why is she doing so well? I've never heard of her before. And now she's like up there with Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak. What the hell? Again, it's one of those, like, she was quite big within the Conservative Party. Again, like, whether you'd heard of her or not, she had held a number of ministerial positions. Current role is Minister of State for Trade Policy. Previously was Secretary of State for Defence. And kind of like Tom Tugendhat, she has this military background, this military connection. She was a naval officer. And she's the MP for Portsmouth, so that's like a big Navy kind of marine ish area, if that's the official term, which I doubt it is. And by the way, if you're wondering who she has aligned herself to since she got booted out, she hasn't said. Neither has Kemi Badenoch or Tom Tugendhat. So none of those final three that didn't make it have actually said, at least at the time of recording, none of them have actually said what they want. And yeah, that has left us with our final two, Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak. One of them is going to have Prime Minister in front of their name. Oh my God, here we are. So let's just do a quick run through of these last two and then we can move on to what happens next. So Liz Truss, first of all, she is one of the longest serving current cabinet ministers. So she's like jumped around from different positions and she's like, you know, made herself part of the furniture within the cabinet. Most recently, she's been in the news with her role as foreign secretary, which she still holds, because she's had these huge challenges to deal with, right? Like the war in Ukraine, the Northern Ireland Protocol, and our sort of disagreements about how we can move forward with Brexit. Those things are like top of her in tray. One thing that she has been like heavily criticized for by her opponents has been the fact that she initially did not want to leave the EU. She backed the Remain campaign for Brexit. And now she's like, hey, I'm Foreign Secretary under Boris Johnson's government. I love Brexit. So people are like, where do you actually stand? Like, what is your actual opinion? Are you just kind of politically motivated? And while I do respect that view, I literally did a TED talk on the importance of being empowered to change your mind. So I am not in the position to criticize that. And I do think it is important if someone thinks, actually, I was wrong about that, they should be able to do that. So it's up to you if you think that this is disingenuous of her or if she's totally entitled to change her mind now that new information is available. Up to you. I'm just saying that has been a source of criticism. Look at me being all BBC. And yeah, her backers, let's talk about them. They include Jacob Rees-Mogg. He's a fan of Liz Truss. Nadine Dorries, who I've talked about on this podcast already. Therese Coffey, James Cleverly, and Kwasi Kwarteng. They are Team Liz. So that's her. Then let's talk about Rishi Sunak. He was the Chancellor. Then he stepped down and that kind of set off this domino of events that really led to Boris Johnson's resignation. We know Rishi Sunak, he was in charge of the country's bank account during the pandemic. He was one of the key figures at those daily briefings when we were all fucking petrified. He was the one that was telling us, right, this is what the furlough scheme is going to mean. Let's do this eat out to help out thing. Oh my gosh, do you remember that? And recently he has had, you know, he was this sort of poster boy and people were so fond of him. He had a really kind of ubiquitously popular reputation. And then he fell out of favour in the last few months, really, particularly because he received that fine from the police as part of Partygate. He was caught out breaking the rules. And then his wife's tax details, let's put it like that, they were brought into the public discourse. They were splashed on the front pages and how wealthy she is and just how little tax she's paid. And it's all about her being a non-dom resident. I've actually done a podcast episode on that, so I won't go into detail. But he has, because of these various things, not been the public's favourite person. So he's had a bit of a rocky road up and down. And then, of course, he has championed these the rise in national insurance tax, which has definitely pissed off, I guess lots of people, but also, you know, the heartlandy conservatives who don't believe really in upping tax at all. he's pissed them off because it goes against one of the like core policies. But his argument is like, well, I needed to do it to pay back all the debts that we owed from COVID. It's up to you. Other people say, well, there's other ways you could have done that. Again, I've done podcasts on all this stuff. But yeah, so this has been his rocky road to the prime ministerial campaign. The people that back him include Dominic Raab, Grant Shapps, Gavin Williamson, Stephen Barclay, and Matt Hancock, if his support goes a particularly long way. I'm not 100% sure it does, but those are the people that back Rishi Sunak at this point. Interestingly, and I'm sure you've thought about this, if Liz Truss wins, she'll be the third ever female to be Prime Minister. We had Margaret Thatcher, then Theresa May, and then it would have been her. And if Rishi Sunak wins, he'll be the first ever Asian Prime Minister. That is interesting and it's worthy of note, and I assume you'd already made a note of that, but in case you hadn't, there it is. Okay, now you know how we got here and like how it all works. Let's talk about what they're arguing about. So like, where do they disagree and what would life look like under Truss or Sunak? So obviously, they've been doing these televised debates. And the big debate, I would say the big point of difference between Sunak and Truss is tax. And so Liz Truss has tried to kind of set herself out as the ultimate, like, loyal conservative. I will stick to conservative values. And so she has said, I will cut taxes immediately. Sunak has been upping them. I will slash it. I will stop taxing you so much. Sunak has said, well, no, I'm the one that's familiar with the economy. I'm the one that's been Chancellor this whole time. I will wait until this inflation problem is under control. And to put the inflation thing into context for you just really quickly, just this week, UK inflation has hit a 40-year high, 9.4% inflation, because the price of food and fuel just keeps going up. And you do not need me to tell you that. I'm sure you're feeling it and I'm sure it aches. So this is becoming particularly personal because Rishi Sunak, he might be able to stand up there and say, well, I know the economy better than anyone. But there are plenty of critics that are saying, yes, you know the economy better than anyone. And look at the state that it's in. I mean, his fans would say, well, hang on, he can't, you know, be responsible for what is a lot to do with global problems. But many still point at him and say, you could have done better. Literally up to you. I'm not here to tell you how to think. I'm just saying these are the angles on where they both sit. And it does feel like they're both really opposed on this tax piece. So Truss says that she would scrap this national insurance rise and she would cancel any plans to rise corporation tax. And like I say, Rishi Sunak is like, no, I would carry on going pretty much down the track that we're on. Let's listen to them talking about it instead of me wanging on the televised leadership debate. This was on ITV last Sunday, the 17th of July.
Rishi, you have raised taxes to the highest level in 70 years. That is not going to drive economic growth. You raised national insurance, even though people like me opposed it in cabinet at the time, because we could have afforded to fund the NHS through general taxation. The fact is that raising taxes at this moment will choke off economic growth and will prevent us getting the revenue we need to pay off the debt.
Rishi Sunak, respond to Liz Truss.
I mean, we have to also recognise that we just went through a once-in-a-century pandemic with all the damage that it did to our economy. And I think everyone realises that we were going to have to pay that back. But I'd love to stand here. I'd love to stand here and say, look, I'll cut this tax, that tax and another tax, and it will all be OK. But you know what? It won't. There's a cost to these things, the cost of higher inflation, higher mortgage rates, eroded savings. And you know what? This something for nothing economics isn't conservative. It's socialism.
Under your plans, we are predicted to have a recession because you have raised tax. It is cutting back on growth. It is preventing companies from investing and it's taking money out of people's pockets. That is no way to get the economy going during a recession.
So there you go. That's Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss kind of going head to head on ITV on the 17th of July. And this is really important, right? Because the cost of living crisis is so still happening in our lives. And everyone is I'm feeling it. We're all feeling it. And a poll of Tory party members has shown that this is the top issue that they care about right now. And I know you might be thinking, well, hang on, isn't it important what we all think? Yes, it is, but not really in this leadership election. It's kind of just up to them what they find important. And that is what Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak will focus on, because that is who they're trying to win over. Also, by the way, in their top three within the Conservative Party membership is the economy. So we can expect this debate around inflation and growth to rage on. And then the other top three issue is immigration. There is less debate, actually, between the two of them on that, because they both kind of support the policies that have been put forward so far. Like, for instance, remember I did an episode on this Rwanda deportation scheme where we would send essentially people who weren't deemed eligible to have immigration status here or to have refugee status here, we would deport them to Rwanda and they would settle there. Such a controversial policy. But actually, both Sunak and Truss seem to be in favour at this point in time. So that policy probably won't see as much of a debate, but they do seem opposed on tax and on how to handle the cost of living crisis. And then just a sense of like who they are. Let me, I think it's important to play you their campaign videos or at least some clips from them so you can get a sense for their narrative and how they like to tell it. You can get a sense for this is the Britain under them that they're trying to make you imagine. Whether it will actually happen is something else. I mean, often leaders promise the world and then they get in power and it's like, oh my God. but let's talk about Rishi Sunak first. He was one of the first to announce his leadership bid and he had this very, very slick video talking about, you know, the story of his grandmother migrating to the UK and all the opportunities he was given by his family. It's like a very wholesome kind of up from nothing story. There was some questioning at the time about how long he'd been planning this video. There was definitely questions around, like, how long have you been planning this video? It's very well put together and it came out very quickly. And it was like, have you been planning this from even back when you were pretending to support Boris Johnson? Is that where we are? So there's definitely been some questions around that, especially because the Ready for Rishi, which is his campaign slogan, the Ready for Rishi website had been registered back in December. That was a while ago. And it was definitely a time when Rishi Sunak had not stepped out and criticised Boris Johnson yet. He was still very much Chancellor and very much kind of, at least outwardly, sticking by him. But it was also, if you think about December, a time that Boris Johnson was under increasing pressure around his standards and around Partygate. That was the big thing. So yeah, that's been a debate. But anyway, let's have a listen to how Rishi Sunak is positioning his narrative and his campaign.
Our country faces huge challenges, the most serious for a generation. And the decisions we make today will decide whether the next generation of British people will also have the chance of a better future. Do we confront this moment with honesty, seriousness, and determination? Or do we tell ourselves comforting fairy tales that might make us feel better in the moment but will leave our children worse off tomorrow? Someone has to grip this moment and make the right decisions.
So there you go, that's a clip from Rishi Sunak's campaign video. And this theme of like people selling a fairy tale, that is this pillar to Sunak's narrative. He keeps going back to it because he's sort of saying, look, I'm the only candidate who tells it like it is. I'm sensible. I'm serious. I'm not going to, you know, what's that expression? My mum says it all the time. I'm not going to sell you a pup. I think that's it. My mum has all these bizarre expressions. She always says, sod that for a game of soldiers. I always wonder what the hell that means. Anyway, yeah, he's got this narrative of like, I'm not selling you a bullshit thing. I'm the serious one. You can take me seriously. And he's kind of leaning into this message about future generations. Let's make sacrifices now and then, you know, open doors for the future. As well, he talks about his plans for the economy and immigration. Sunak has also made promises around cracking down on child sexual exploitation. And he's pledged further protection to the environment. So that's his, like, package, if you like. Liz Truss, On the other hand, like I said before, she's positioning herself as that traditional conservative. So if you think conservative, treat me as synonymous with that. And it's kind of backed up with the fact that she is actually the bookie's favourite. Even though Sunak did really well in those votes within Parliament, now it's kind of opened out. She has been really top of that list. Even before we got to this, even like last year, Liz Truss was like top of the ranks for popularity within the Conservative Party because she's seen as that, you know, typical Conservative, I guess. Let's have a listen to her launch video.
As Prime Minister, I will lead a government committed to core Conservative principles. Low taxes, a firm grip on spending, driving growth in the economy, and giving people the opportunity to achieve anything they want to achieve, regardless of their background. We need a Prime Minister with experience, who can hit the ground running from day one, whether that's ensuring Putin loses in Ukraine or getting the economy going. I will work day and night to lead a party and a government that puts more money in your pocket and secures a better life for you and your family.
Okay, so that was Liz Truss and her like launch video, her campaign video. Some of her other policy promises, like some of them overlap, to be honest, with what Boris Johnson was doing, because she's kind of like, she's been a strong ally of his, if you like. So Johnson's levelling up agenda. Do you remember that was the idea that let's reduce economic inequality across the UK? If you come from the north of England, you shouldn't be, you know, like presented with less opportunities in life. So she supports that and she kind of pushes that narrative. She also talks about like, I want people to start and grow businesses. I'm a friend of entrepreneurs and like self-starters. That's again, very conservative. Like we won't tax you, you're on your own, but start a business, take the risk. And if you do well, great. That's all yours, you can keep it. That's a very like conservative thing. On immigration, the Times claimed that she's actually sort of suggested expanding this Rwanda scheme to other countries, including Turkey. But just to mention, a spokesman for Turkey very quickly came out saying that they already have their own refugee problem, so they wouldn't necessarily want to take on anyone else's. So it's more like she sort of suggested it in passing rather than it being something that's official. If she takes over, it's definitely happening. So anyway, there you go. That's a kind of an idea of the narrative they're selling and their priorities. So let's talk about what happens next, process-wise. When will we know who's won? How does this happen? So it is, like I've said a million times, now in the hands of the Conservative Party membership, not just the MPs. That means it's about 200,000 people who will receive a postal ballot. So they've registered to be a member of the Conservative Party. They are an established part of it. And now they have this very privileged position of getting to choose who they want to be their next leader and who will, by default, become Prime Minister. And so across the course of August, while Parliament is on this recess break, there will be virtual hustings. And, you know, hustings, it's like a political word for basically just like the candidates getting an opportunity to debate each other, and they'll answer questions from the audience. That's basically, so you'll see lots of that, I'm absolutely sure. They'll also probably be like visiting local Conservative Party groups and trying to, you know, schmooze and nuzzle in with Conservative Party members, like the grassroots diehard supporters who have been there the whole time. They will be doing the rounds, picking out the spots in the UK that are an absolute hub of Conservative activity, and then getting on in there, drinking beer in the pubs, all that stuff. I'll be surprised if we don't see lots of that. You might also be thinking, I had a question, I think it was from Sarah, does this mean that we're going to have an election, like a general election soon? The next general election is not due till 2024. This shouldn't necessarily, like, this doesn't have to impact that. However, history is important to look at. I'm not saying, you know, it's always going to repeat itself, but it's interesting that both Theresa May and Boris Johnson became Prime Minister via this method, via winning a leadership contest rather than by winning a general election. Remember, they both replaced people who stood down. Theresa May replaced David Cameron. Boris Johnson replaced Theresa May. And actually, both of them ended up calling general elections earlier than they needed to be. So Theresa May called that snap election, do you remember? And it was actually terrible for her. She did much worse and she had a less support in Parliament than from before. So she probably regretted calling it. I can't imagine that she didn't. Boris Johnson, on the other hand, things went really well for him. When he called an election, he got a huge majority. So, yeah, we both saw elections coming quicker from those people stepping in. Maybe history will repeat itself. Maybe we can expect another general election before 2024. I don't know. Watch this space, I would say. I would argue that whoever it is, be it Liz Truss or Rishi Sunak, wouldn't be that wise to call an election that soon, because the Conservatives have a huge majority in Parliament. And so, like, that is very helpful. If you want to pass laws, it's great to have a big majority. If you call an election, there's a risk that you could lose that majority. There's a risk that you could lose. And then how pathetic would that look? Like, oh, I became leader. Awesome, I'm prime minister. Let's call an election. Oh, fuck. Now Keir Starmer's prime minister. So I don't know how wise it would be just because of the position they're in. That being said, though, if they just constantly get barraged by, you didn't actually win, you're not a legitimate leader, maybe they'll have no choice. Let's see. It's a very interesting question, Sarah, and you're right to ask it. And with that said, I'm exhausted. Let's leave it there. Hopefully you feel really caught up and hopefully you feel prepared for the month ahead. And I assume you have a preference. I'm desperate to know who that is and why. Please do get in touch at barenakedpolitics, or you can get in touch with me at juliabell_x. Let's have a chat about it. I promise I'll keep you updated. I'll definitely do an episode about this before we know the result, for sure. Give you lots of updates. Make sure you get your questions in. Hannah, I love you. You are an awesome producer. Thank you for all your work. There's two producers that work regularly on this, Hannah and Maddie, and they're both such legends. Maddie did the last episode, Hannah did this one. So it's been really fun working with you both on this story, on this leadership race story. And I thank you. And guys, if you're listening and this is helpful to you, please do become a patron, because that's how I can recruit and pay for producers to make this happen. So if you want to keep the podcast going, if you want to support it, please do. It's about cost of a cup of tea every month, and it helps, you know, keep the ball rolling. So thank you to those who have become patrons really recently. I really appreciate that from you. And thank you as well to those of you who've been keeping it going for a while. You guys are awesome, and you are literally the reason I'm still going and the reason I'm still able to do this. So thank you to you. Like I say, make sure you've subscribed or clicked follow if you're listening on Spotify. Follow the Instagram page at Barenaked Politics, and have a glass of wine or a lovely cup of tea or a long bath. You deserve it. And God knows the news is stressful at the moment. So do something nice for yourself. And I'll speak to you in the next one. Lots of love.